Welcome to episode 230 of the Ski Podcast, and thanks for joining us, listener. Today, we're going to be finding out about the legendary resort of Jackson Hole in Wyoming, the Last Ride film project, and we'll be finding out how Sass Fay are celebrating the 40th anniversary of Last Christmas by Wham. We'll also have our regular snow reports, your feedback, and an update on the latest racing action from Matt Garker. Now, my name is Ian Martin, and I'd like to introduce my guest today. Firstly, joining us from the States is Jess McMillan from Jackson Hole. Hi, Jess. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I literally just skied into my office. We just received almost 3 feet of snow, and so it is so good out there. I did consider blowing you off, but I'm here, and I'm here to report that the skiing is absolutely fantastic.
Well, I'm delighted for two reasons. I'm delighted you got great snow, and I'm delighted that you've chosen to share this time with us this morning. I really appreciate it. We're going to be talking more about Jackson Hole a little bit later on, but I want to introduce my second guest today. For his first time on the show, we've got John Moy. He is director of the Last Ride project, more of which later. Hi, John. How are you?
Hi. I'm very well, thank you. Had a lovely day getting my girlfriend her first set of ski boots this morning.
Okay, but so not skiing in the fresh powder. To clarify, Jess is in the States. I think it's about 11 in the morning for her. We're in the UK. It's about 6 in the evening. Whereabouts are you, John?
I am just on the south coast near Brighton.
Within reach of myself. I'm in Brighton as well. So I don't know if you looked at the sea today, pretty rough. And not even a day for the surfers out there. But a question I do like to ask all my guests, and I think we know the answer from Jess, so I'm going to ask you first, John. When were you last skiing or snowboarding?
So the last time I was on a set of skis was just before Christmas last year, when I was actually on a sand dune in the Atacama Desert, just on the coast in a town called Iquique. So a little bit different.
You were skiing on a sand dune in Chile?
I was, yes.
I think you win all the points today. And Jess, I know you skied this morning, but I think Jackson Hole has been open since the end of November. Is that right?
Yeah, we opened right after Thanksgiving here in the States. So December 1st was our opening day.
Great. And have you been skiing every day since then?
Don't get me fired. But yes, we do try and ski every day. You know, I miss a few here and there. We were super lucky to have fantastic snowmaking here. Mother Nature really didn't bless us until last weekend. So we've been skiing man-made, which is why I'm so excited this morning because, you know, 3 feet of snow over the weekend and now we're skiing the real stuff.
So you're making me very jealous there, Jess. But from Saturday, I'm very excited because I'm going to be skiing in Teen. I haven't spent Christmas in a ski resort since 1997 when I was doing seasons. Regular listeners will know I travelled to Ladies Alp in April in a luxury minibus from Vans for Vans, and we actually enjoyed that so much. We're doing that again for this trip. I'm going to put a link into the show notes, but these vans are amazing. We've got 9 people, and you just have so much space for people and bags. There's 4 adults sharing the driving, 2 families sharing the costs. It's a great fun and a way lower carbon footprint than flying. I'll put a link to the show notes, but you mentioned the fresh snow, Jess, and I've been paying very close attention to the snow forecast, and I can see there is a big snowstorm coming to the Alps this weekend, probably going to have maybe 20 or 30 centimetres on Thursday, and then maybe 70 centimetres or something like that coming in over the weekend. So let's have a listen to a few snow reports from some of our regular contributors, and they can tell us what snow's like in their resorts. We've got Jen Sang from That's La Plan, and she's reporting from La Plan, Dave from Snow Pro Ski School in Verbier, and Alexandra Armand from Tip Top Snow Coaching in Ladies Alp.
Hello, Ian and the Ski Podcast. This is Jen coming to you live from the slopes in La Plan. And I am just up at the Roche de Rio, and we are heading towards the Source Run for those of you that know La Plan, down into Belcourt. And I'm here today to tell you that this is just the middle of our opening week, and it is, the snow has been absolutely fantastic. So last weekend we had a big dump of snow on the Saturday, or the Friday evening before the official Saturday opening. So we had fresh powder across all the pistes for the most of the weekend, and it was so quiet that we really did have fresh powder on the piste to play with. It was absolutely brilliant. We actually had enough snow that we had an early opening weekend as well. So the weekend previous actually opened a few lifts so we could get out and have a little play then, and that was really good too. At the moment right now, the piste are really nicely groomed. It's very quiet, so they are still in a really nice condition. Quite hard patch as you get lower down into like Montchaban-le-Coche and Montalbert, And as I headed down into Mont Chauvin yesterday, there were a couple of polished, quite icy areas, so we stayed away from those and popped back up higher. We have had a mixed bag of weather conditions. We have had blue sky, sunny days on some days, and other days we have had thick cloud and whiteout, and some days we've had both. So it really has been a week to use the webcams to see where the best weather has been. And Odin, I'm here with my biggest little one. Odin, what do you think the snow's like at the minute?
Good
snow? Yeah. And is it going to snow today?
It already snowed a little bit.
So yeah, we are forecast to have quite a bit of snow over Thursday and Friday. And actually the temperature has really dropped today, which was good news. And we've seen the first flakes starting to fall. It really is closing in now. Like I said, we're up at Roche de Mio, so up at 2,700 metres. And you can see the clouds are really starting to hang low, full of snow, hopefully. And after that snowfall on the Thursday and Friday, it does look like we're going to have a big snowfall again, even bigger over the weekend. Fingers crossed for that. But we're looking at like 30 plus centimetres of snow if the forecast is to be trusted. So that is pretty much it from me. Like I said, I'm Jen. I run That's La Plan. It's a travel guide for families heading to La Plan. So if you've got any questions or if you're in La Plan, let me know and I will see you on the slopes. Take care and happy Christmas. Bye.
Hello, Ian. It's Dave from Snow Pros Ski School. Hope you're well. Hope everyone who is listening is well. I'm here in Verbier today. I've been roaming around. So yesterday I was also all over the Port du Soleil. Last few weeks I've been Sasfay, Glacier 3000, all sorts of stuff. But I have not been anywhere where the snow is as good as it is today. And today I'm joined by Logan. How are you?
Hi, my name's Logan. I'm getting a lesson from Dave, my first lesson in probably about 15 years.
And the burning.
And he's given me some great tips, and skiing already sounds much more fun.
You are too kind, sir. And we're going to have lovely chats about all sorts of different topics. And the burning question that everyone wants to know is, how is the snow?
Snow is lovely. It's a beautiful day. The snow is just crisp and powdery. It's about 12 o'clock now, so it's getting a little bit loose, but still lovely.
Yeah, it is good. So we're up here on Lac de Vaud 2 lift, which is the one that goes up to Tourtain, and it's very slow and old, which is why we've chosen this one. Lots of people having lovely times, but the snow is firm, it's grippy, it's proper snow, and it's good all the way down to, it's a bit more manufactured after Ruinette, which is why I've kept you up here. But the snow itself is pretty good, and it's a bit more manufactured down towards Medran, but you can ski down to Medran station. Bit of a storm coming in tomorrow, I think, or tomorrow, no, Thursday, I think it is, it's scheduled. There's a bit of hot wind coming, and that's going to bring a snowstorm at altitude on Thursday night. So from a, well, yeah, pretty much everything is open. From a very snowy-looking and lovely Verbier. Nice and quiet, actually, today as well. Logan, do you want to say goodbye to all the millions of people that listen to this?
Absolutely, guys. Get out here and enjoy the snow.
And we'll see you all later. Have fun, Ian. Thanks for the podcast, and thanks for all you do. See ya. Bye.
Hi, this is Alex from Tip Top Ski Coaching here in Les Deux Alpes with a local snow report for you. So we're expecting 40 centimetres of snow between Thursday afternoon and Friday afternoon, which will freshen up the piece and add to the off-piste so that the snow that we've already got will become the base layer and we will be able to start to ski off-piste without touching through to the rocks and the ground, which will be fantastic for the Christmas holidays. We're also using the new Gendry 3S Express, which is our brand new lift from the town to the glacier. It's very plush, seats for everybody, and best thing is you get to the glacier in just 17 minutes from the village. Absolutely fantastic.
And if you're heading to the Alps this winter, you can save money on your ski hire by using the code SKIPODCAST at InSportRent.com, or you can simply take the link in the show notes for your discount to be automatically applied at checkout. Now, bit of GB race news. The GB slalom races were in Val d'Isère last weekend. Let's hear from Matt Garker from the Skiing is Believing podcast for an update on the latest racing news.
Hello, Ian, and hello to everybody at the Ski Podcast. It's Matt Garkey here from the Skiing is Believing Podcast to give you a quick rundown. So we have had Dave Riding, Laurie Taylor and Billy Major, the three Brits on the slalom side of things, in action last weekend in Val d'Isère, with Dave and Laurie both scoring top 12 results. Dave in ninth, Laurie 12th. Unfortunately, Billy yet to pick up any points this season, but it's about that work in progress, and I'm sure it will be coming. Lindsey Vonn, at 40 years old, having had a knee replacement over the summer, foreran the women's speed events in Beaver Creek at the weekend and will start her World Cup return on Saturday in the Super Gs from St. Moritz, Switzerland. So that is certainly something to keep your eye out for. As well, Brazil have had some success. The men were over in Beaver Creek, returning to the GS there. And Lucas Pinheiro Bratton, having made the switch from Norway last year, is on the podium. He was second in the GS there and looks for his first slalom podium before Christmas. This weekend, the men have got speed action in Val Gardena, the Womenville Super Gs in St. Moritz that I mentioned. And it is tech for the men as well, Sunday and Monday in Alta Badia, with Dave, Laurie and Billy once again in action on Monday.
So if you want to keep up to date with that, listen to the Skiing is Believing podcast, part of the Ski Podcast Network. Also competing this weekend is Zoe Atkin. She's in the halfpipe at Copper Mountain in the States. The slalom team, again, will be competing at Alta Badia. And friend of the pod, telemarker Jasmine Taylor, is back in action for the first time this season in Pinzolo. I think that's probably all we can get away with of that. But I doubt there's many people listening to this podcast who don't know the song Last Christmas by Wham. It's number one in the UK charts right now. But did you know that it's celebrating its 40th anniversary this month? And did you also know that the video for the song was filmed in Sass Bay in Switzerland? They have all sorts of celebrations going on for that anniversary. So I called up their tourist office to find out more. Right, well, I'm delighted to be joined just now by Leila Sabrigan, who is Marketing Sales Manager at Sass Bay Tourism. Hi, Leila. How are you?
Very good, thank you. How are you?
I am good, although I'm jealous of you because you're out in a ski resort. Just tell us, what's the weather like today?
Oh, it's bright blue sky, perfect conditions.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like the sort of conditions that we saw in the Wham! Last Christmas video, which was filmed 40 years ago in 1984. And I think probably anyone, regardless of their age, will know that song, even if they haven't seen the video. And that's why I wanted to have you on today, because you're actually celebrating this in Sass Bay in lots of different ways. I wondered if I could ask you first, we were talking about this earlier. When I last came to Sass Bay, I came by bus. When I hopped out the bus, right now, if you did that, there's a karaoke box. The first thing you can do when you get to a resort is do your own version of Last Christmas.
Yes, exactly. So if you arrive by bus in Sass Bay, you get out and the first thing you see is obviously our beautiful mountains. And then you will see a glass box in front of the bus terminal where you can go in. It's really nice, decorated inside, Christmassy vibe. With a karaoke box where you can actually sing Last Christmas. And if you happen to post a photo or a video of that and tag us, then you can even win some prizes.
You don't do it on how well they've sung it.
No.
Cool. And so that's the first thing. There are lots of things going on, you know, to celebrate this anniversary. At the museum, there's a special Wham! Exhibition as well. Is that going on all winter?
Yes, that's actually going until April. And it's a special exhibition that we created to celebrate this iconic music video. There you can get in and learn all the fun facts about the filming in Sass Bay, as well as hear some voices of people who were actually present in 1984 when they filmed that in Sass Bay, as well as maybe a fun little cutout where you can be part of the band and make a photo of it.
Yeah, I know the sort of photos where you could talk about, like, you'd be the face of George Michael or something, wouldn't you? And as well as the museum, you can also have a look at the locations. I read about, like, a Wham! Walks, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, the Wham! Walks, that is also a really fun thing to do at the moment, because you will meet up at the tourism office and you will visit the actual filming locations they used back in the 80s, where you will also learn a lot about the filming back then.
And specifically, I think on the 21st of December, I guess maybe it's, you know, literally just before Christmas, you're also putting on like an 80s wham party.
Yeah, that's going to be a big party. You all have to come. So basically, we're going to celebrate the whole 80s on that evening in the gym in Saas-Fee. And if you show up in your best 80s outfit, you even get a free shot.
Yeah, excellent. I can see lots of people are coming out in their like neon onesies from the 80s, the Nebuka suits or something like that. So there's plenty of things going on there to celebrate last Christmas. You can sing it. You can go and find out more about how they made the video and look around the town and even attend a party. One of the reasons I actually came to my notice was because I received an email from one of the hotels called the Capra. It's a 5-star hotel. I noticed that they've got a special package all to do with the Wham anniversary, where they're including a Wham cocktail as well. And you can do the Wham walk, and then they've got kind of special 80s dishes as well. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct. So that package is a really good deal, I think. If I wouldn't live here, I would book it myself, because like that, you can experience the whole Wham experience in Saas-Fee. They will also host nostalgic nights in the hotel's wine cellar, where they also will serve you classic 80s dishes, like, for example, an English trifle.
And prawn cocktail as well, right? Excellent. Well, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. So there's an email address in there. If you see, you need to send an email with the subject line "Whamtastic" to be able to get that special deal. And then everything, you know, is included in there. So you can do the singing, you can do the tour, you can go to the museum, and you'll get your Wham cocktail as well. Disappointingly, unlike Club Tropicana, drinks aren't for free. Okay, well, that's brilliant, Leila. Have a great time this winter. I mean, some people, when you come into Christmas, think they're probably a bit fed up of listening to songs like Last Christmas, but I presume if you live in Saas-Fee, you can never hear it too often.
Yeah, no, I still love the song very much. It's the greatest Christmas song ever.
Excellent. Well, that's brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us, Leila.
Thank you very much.
It was really interesting. Even better, I happen to know that a regular guest on the show, Catherine Murphy, had just done the Wham walk herself. So I asked her to send in a little report.
Hi, Ian. Catherine Murphy here, talking to you from Zurich Main Station. I'm on my way to Austria to the resort of Maria Alm, which is in the Ski Amadei area of Austria. And I've just come from Saas-Fee. So a long day on the rails today. I've spent the weekend celebrating the 40th anniversary of Last Christmas in Saas-Fee. And one of the things I did as part of that celebration was the Wham Walk. Now, this is a very laid-back, easygoing, not too intense guided tour through the village of Saas-Fee. Takes you to a couple of the locations where the video was shot. So basically, we walked up to the Wildy area of the village, which is just really up the hill off the main street. And it takes you to a lovely tree-lined residential area of chalets. And we walked up and we came to that, the chalet, it's called the Schlecht Chalet. You know, you come to the fence where in the video you see George, Andrew, Shirley, Pepsi and the rest of their friends arriving in the resort, you know, to start their holiday, and jumping over the fence to go into the chalet and having snowball fights as they go. Now, today the chalet is privately owned, so you can't really hop the fence, but you are able to go up and have your photograph taken in front of the chalet. And I have to say, hilariously, one of our group, his name is Jamie, but he'll be forever known to me as George. He spent the weekend dressed as George Michael with the long coat, woolly scarf and a really bad George Michael wig, which was just comical. So himself and our tour guide, Lynn, reenacted that scene where George Michael and his love interest, Kathy Hill, are running down the slope and George falls over. And I swear to God, I haven't laughed so much in ages. So from Chalet Schlecht, we walked over, 5-minute walk over to the site of Chalet Tita, where the interior scenes for the video were shot. The famous dinner party where George Michael is at the one end of the table giving the evil eye to Kathy Hill because she's turned her attentions to Andrew. So sadly, that chalet is no longer there. It's been replaced by a building that's a cultural centre, but nonetheless, it's nice to wander up there and hear some of the stories about the 5 days that the group spent in Saas-Fee. And we heard about how the group turned up without proper winter gear at all, so the locals had to go and get some for them. George Michael turned up wearing summer moccasins and refused to get into winter clothing unless he was filming. Also, by the way, he was having some bad hair days. You might notice if you look at the video that he's wearing a hooded jacket in one of the scenes. And that was because the snowy climbs were playing havoc with his curls. So we also heard about how the chalet where they were filming the dinner party hadn't been heated, so they were freezing. And they had to retreat to a basement studio in the building, which had been left open by the local owner, and they were welcomed in and they were able to warm up in there. So I would say to anyone who's going to South Fay to do the Wham Walk Tour, try to dress up in some Wham gear. You know, for the women, that's one-piece ski suits, flashy ski glasses like the ones Pepsi had. For the guys, it's long coat, woolly scarf, and yeah, a bad George Michael wig if you can find one, or an Andrew Ridgeley wig. And you just will have great fun reenacting scenes from the video. Okay, cheers.
So thinking about that video and just looking ahead a little bit, I have an idea for episode 237, which is coming out on the 14th of February. I'm on the lookout for ski Valentines. Did you meet your partner on a ski holiday or maybe doing a ski season? And do you fancy sharing your story? Drop me an email at theskipodcast@gmail.com if you do. Right. Thank you for waiting, Jess. We're going to come on to you now. You're Director of Events and Partnerships, I think, at Jackson Hole, a former Warren Miller athlete, free ride world tour winner. I mean, that would be a good podcast in itself, I think. But today I asked you on because, you know, Jackson Hole is just an iconic destination. I think it probably should be on any serious skier's bucket list. I wondered if you could just give us a kind of rough idea for the layman. Whereabouts in the States are you?
Sure. We're in the Intermountain West, so Wyoming specifically, which is kind of in the middle of nowhere, to be completely honest. Very small population. You know, we're the third least populated state behind or in front of Alaska. But we're in the Grand Tetons. So we have 4,000 vertical feet, which I should convert that into meters for your listeners. But yes, it's a beautiful place in the northwest corner of Wyoming, Intermountain West, located in the Grand Tetons. So we're right near Yellowstone National Park and Grand Teton National Park.
Yeah, I was actually in the States. I think it was in 2022. We went in the summer to Yellowstone, and that was amazing. Such a beautiful area. And we didn't manage to make it over to Jackson at that time. But I have in mind to do a road trip where I'm probably going to like fly into Salt Lake again and then go via Utah to Jackson, Big Sky, Sun Valley, all of those states that are right out there. I'm not going to say in the wilderness, but in the country. I wonder if you could just give us a feel for the layout.
Jackson Hole itself. So Jackson Hole Mountain Resort is one mountain, but within the community, so Teton County, there's Snow King, and we consider that our local town hill. But when, you know, I laugh when we say town hill because it is the steepest vertical drop of any resort in the United States. So it's steep, you know, great to sharpen up your skills and great for ski racing. And then just on the other side of the hill, also the Grand Teton, so tongue in cheek on that one, is Grand Targhee. So within an hour radius, there's three major resorts that you can ski. None of the resorts actually were together. They are all privately owned. But Mountain Collective, you mentioned road tripping, Big Sky, Sun Valley, Grand Targhee, Snow King. The Mountain Collective Pass covers all of those resorts.
Right. That was going to be one of my questions if you're on any of those passes. So Mountain Collective would be the one. And that sounds great. So who would you say Jackson Hole is for? I mean, you've already said it's got a big vertical drop and it includes some of the steepest skiing in the States. What type of skier is it suitable for?
Sure. I think it's for any skier aspiring to get better. With that said, we do have very steep terrain. We have lots of couloirs. You know, we have a sustained vertical drop, which is phenomenal. You mentioned that you're going to Teen, one of my favorite places in the whole entire world. You know, this would be the steepest parts of Teen if you skied there or Val d'Isere. We don't have a lot of flat areas. We do have some beginner terrain. We've really focused on that because it's been hard to get that offering for us, but then it does jump right up. So if you're aspiring to become a better skier, if you want to ski around the world, if you want to, you know, dust up on your out-of-bounds skiing or off-piste skiing, Jackson Hole is the place to go.
And you mentioned, you know, you've got different couloirs. Possibly one of the most famous couloirs in the world is Corbett's Couloir, which is in Jackson Hole. I was looking at a picture, I think, of Doug Coombs taking it on. But that is that something that any member of the public can take on? Do you want to describe it for us?
Yeah, it is funny. I grew up in Jackson Hole. So for me, it didn't seem funny until I went to other places. And it is one of the, it is the steepest couloir that's open. There's a normal open run. So, you know, it's a double black diamond, but the entrance of it is about 2 feet wide and it is a vertical drop. So you don't actually have to catch air, but it feels like you're catching air because it is truly vertical for about 3 to 4 meters. And then you have to take a really sharp turn and you are into the couloir. So the entrance is exciting, if not entertaining. We do have a camera. So if you want to check it out, you can do the live cam, see people dropping in there, but it is open to the public. You know, some days it's really easy. Some days it's nearly impossible. But it's something that you should always, you know, put on your list to check off.
Yeah, I mean, the way you're describing it there, I'm imagining there's probably not so many listeners to the podcast who are going to think, oh, yeah, I fancy that. But certainly it's something to go and have a look at and to see who's taking it on. I wanted to ask another question about skiing on the mountain as well. I can't remember where I read this, and you can tell me whether it's correct or not. But am I right in thinking that you limit the number of lift tickets that you sell on a daily basis to, you know, control the number of people on the hill?
We do. You know, we are part of the Icon Pass and the Mountain Collective Pass. And luckily, we are on everybody's bucket list. But that skiing experience is really important to us. We do have a lot of terrain that is, again, steep and ungroomed, you know, off-piste, things like that. But we also want to make sure that you're skiing and not standing in lift lines. So we have replaced all of our lifts, sublet being the last one we just replaced it this summer. They're all high-speed quads. I think our longest lift is a gondola, which is 10 minutes. So quick lifts, lift service. But we also want to make sure that the hill, the mountain, is not overcrowded. So you really can have that wide open out in the West. You know, Jackson is known for the Serengeti of the West, that experience where you're not crowded with all these skiers. So yes, we do limit our skier days and we do require a reservation unless you have a season's pass here.
Right, unless you have a season pass. So if you've got a season pass, you can do that anytime, but you need to reserve in advance anyway. And then also, again, I may have read this in your press pack or something like that, but am I right in thinking that if you've got a season pass from any other resort, you can get discounted tickets for Jackson Hole?
You can. So if you're part of the Icon Pass, Mountain Collective, or some of our other sister resorts and you have a pass, then you can have a discounted pass here as well. Yep.
That's called the golden ticket. Is that right?
That is the golden ticket. Yes.
Yeah. Makes it sound like, I don't know, Willy Wonka or something like that. But certainly you can get up to 50% off your lift tickets in certain dates if you're in those circumstances. I wonder if I could talk about the town itself. Some people may not even be aware, perhaps, that they've seen Jackson Hole featured in TV programs. I think the popularity of the Paramount Plus series Yellowstone has affected Jackson Hole. And was it also used in The Last of Us? Probably feature more in the next season.
Yes, I'm actually not privy and I don't watch the show, so I apologize. But yes, Jackson Hole, I think if you are a skier or an outdoors person, it has always been on your list. And now it has become more mainstream with the airing of Yellowstone.
I know also you tend to get a number of celebrities coming to the resort. I was doing a bit of research prior to the podcast. I saw Harrison Ford on the list, Sandra Bullock, Brad Pitt. And I wondered if any of them ever get seen skiing in jeans, because something else at Jackson Hole stands out for is, I think last weekend you broke the world record for the number of people skiing in jeans on any single day.
We did. We broke the world record, although we broke our own world record last Saturday. You know, our heritage is ranching. So wearing those Levi's and the cowboy quintessential, you know, 30 years ago, that's what you skied in, was jeans. So bringing back our heritage, also creating a little bit more of a community outreach by providing $25 lift tickets and then having a ton of fun with it. to break the world record. We also had roping clinics and mechanical bull riding. It was a blast.
Well, I saw some photos from it, which I'll share in the show notes. But it looked like people were having fun. I did actually run a poll on Twitter asking whether you should do double denim on the mountain. And convincingly, the vote was against, I can tell you. I've got one last question for you, Jess, just a reminder. So, you know, I know where Wyoming is, and I mentioned Salt Lake City before, but I take it that's where you fly to. And how long would it take you to get up to the town from Salt Lake?
So we have the only airport that is located in Grand Teton National Park. So it's the only airport within the park. We have direct flights from 15 major cities. So if you were coming from the UK and you were flying into New York, LA, Denver, any of those major metropolitans, then it's a quick flight to Jackson Hole. From Jackson Hole to Jackson Mountain Resort, it's a quick 45-minute drive. If you were to fly into Salt Lake and, you know, utilize the road trip mentality, so visiting all of the Wasatch resorts, coming up to Jackson, going up to Big Sky, big road trip, we are 5 hours from Salt Lake. There is a bus service called the Salt Lake City Express that you can jump on there and do that. But I would highly recommend just taking a flight right here. It's a quick one. It's the easiest way to do it. It's probably the most beautiful flight you've ever taken. You're right up against the Tetons, and then you land in Grand Teton National Park. And as you drive out, you go past the National Elk Refuge, which is, you know, there's thousands of elk out there. If it were me, I would fly right into Jackson Hole.
Right. Okay. Well, although about 55 to 60% of our listeners are in the UK, the rest of them are spread all around the world, with the next highest number being in the States. So just good to reiterate that you can fly from all those other airports within the States as well. Well, that's really interesting, Jess. Thanks so much for that. I said it should be on any serious gears bucket list. It's on my bucket list. And from what you've said about it, then you've whetted my appetite even more. So that's brilliant. Thank you very much. What I'd like to do now is to turn to John, if I could. And I mentioned that you are the director of the Last Ride project. We met at Ski Show. We were chatting about it there. And it sounded so interesting, I invited you onto the show to talk about it a little bit more. I wondered if you could just explain for our listeners what the Last Ride project is and perhaps why you put it together.
For sure. And thanks very much for having me on. So the Last Ride project is an adventure and environmental documentary project that I've been making for the last few years, in which myself and two skiers, Will Tucker and Ed Salisbury, are attempting to climb and ski the tallest mountain on each of the seven continents and looking into the impact of global deglaciation on communities and ecosystems around the world. We started in September 2021, climbing the highest mountain in Europe, which is Mount Elbrus in Russia. We then moved on to Kilimanjaro and Denali the following year, Aconcagua just before last Christmas, which is where I was skiing on a sand dune. And then we'll be moving on to the remaining three mountains over the next year, if timelines all line up as we hope they will.
So I understand the point about the highest peaks, and you're saying that you're climbing it, and that in itself is a significant adventure. Why have you specifically, you know, picked these mountains, and what is the point behind the name of the Last Ride?
So the project initially started when Ed was on a ski trip in North Africa. And he was trying to think what the next great adventure that he could go on is. Is it possible to ski on the highest mountain on every continent? Is it possible to ski from the summit of the highest mountain on every continent? And then the idea really just started, as I said, as an attempt to find what that next great adventure could be for three friends who like to go skiing. But then when we were researching the climbing routes, looking at pictures of these glaciers going back in time, we realized that they were receding at such a rapid rate that we would likely be the last people able to do this. Because by the time we complete the project, at least one of them will have melted forever, which is Puncak-Jaya and Western Pat. We're looking at Kilimanjaro following that quite shortly after, which is when the project really took a completely different direction. And we realized that we were talking about a climate narrative. And that set us on this journey when we're trying to figure out how we can be a part of that climate conversation and use the process of climbing and skiing as a vehicle for us to tell that story.
Okay, that's really interesting. So you mentioned a couple of those mountains there that you're saying it may not be possible to ski on them, and that's because of global warming, there being a listener on there. You know, Mount Elbrus, I get, is Mount McKinley, was that one of them on the list as well?
Denali.
Yeah, Aconcagua, is that, does that have snow all year on it typically?
It does, but it's minimal. We had hoped to ski the Polish glacier, and we climbed to the base of it, climbed the first half of it. But then we realized that given the weather window and the condition of that glacier, it was not going to be safe to continue. We had a very finite window of about 12 hours between 150 mile an hour winds. And with the rate of recession on that glacier, the routes that we had intended didn't really even exist anymore. Like seracs were bending down. It was very icy, very rocky. So we then down climbed, went around the mountain and ascended up a different route to summit from there and skied a very, very small sliver of snow on the summit.
But you did manage to get your skiing in. Kind of reminds me of Arnie Wilson, a guy who skied every day for a year. And sometimes he just had to get his skis out and find some snow to be able to ski on. And so you mentioned that next year, 2025, I can't recall the name of the mountain now, but did you say it was in Papua New Guinea? Is that the highest mountain in Oceania, is it?
Yeah, so that's Puncak Jaya, which is also known as Karsten's Pyramid, which is in Western Papua, so the same island as Papua New Guinea in Oceania. It's coming on for 5,000 meters, around 4,800 and some change. And it's a really amazing mountain, and there's a really important story to be told there. It's right next to the largest open pit gold mine in the world, one of the last pieces of remaining equatorial ice, one of the last largest rainforests. It's quite a difficult mountain to get to from a geopolitical point of view, because they've been in a state of pretty severe civil unrest since the 70s. So the mountain has been closed for a long time. We've tried to get there multiple times, but it's been shut down. They've just opened it up for a brief window, but due to an election that's about to happen, they've closed it back down again because they didn't want anything to go wrong before that.
Right, okay. And evidently, you know, by hitting the highest peaks in each of the continents, you are going to very high altitude. You're presumably carrying skis with you as well, effectively bootpacking up there, which must make it even harder. Like for most people, when they're at altitudes, you know, altitude sickness can come in at any point, really, from sort of 3,000, 3,500 upwards, but much more likely when you're getting to that 4,000, 5,000 and above altitudes. Have all three of you on the team been okay carrying all of your kit at that altitude?
Carrying the kit is a tricky bit. Part of the process of climbing is that we do a kind of a cash and carry system. So we'll come up the mountain one day with a bunch of our kit, dig a hole in the snow, bury it, including cameras. It took me a while to get used to doing this. Put a bamboo stick on it so we can find it again. Go back down and sleep. So we've acclimatized a little bit. We've brought some of our load up the mountain. We go low to sleep. Then we go up the next day past it, sleep higher with our tents, the last bit of kit. Then we ski down, pick up the stuff from that hole, bring it back up to that new camp, and then we repeat that whole cycle. So it helps with the acclimatization, but it's difficult. As I said, with Aconcagua, we had that very narrow weather window, and therefore we were forced to ascend a bit quicker than we really had intended. We had to do a full day with all of our load. We had to take everything all at once and then go straight to the summit about 4 a.m. the next day without a rest, which was the only thing that we could do, but it led to some pretty big problems from an altitude sickness point of view.
Okay, and you mentioned your filming and cameras as well. I mean, you've got a background in filming. I know you worked on the GB Park and Pike team back around the time of the Sochi Olympics. But is there not an issue as well with filming at that sort of altitude as well? I mean, on a very basic level, if I go out with my GoPro on a cold day and the battery uses, you know, gets used up incredibly quickly, how do you deal with those sort of things at altitude?
Yeah, that's been quite a learning curve as well, keeping things warm and keeping things charged. So on our first mountain, this was very much a baptism by fire kind of thing. As you said there, I've done a lot of work in filming skiing, but high altitude mountaineering and climbing, this was pretty new. So we were in a position where on that summit day, you'd get a GoPro out of your bag and within 20, 30 seconds, the battery would die. It was completely useless. But they've now released their Enduro batteries, and they're much better in the cold weather. But the key with those kind of things is all batteries need to be on inside layers close to your skin. You only bring it out when you're going to use it, and it goes straight back in. Then at nighttime, we sleep with everything in our sleeping bags. So in my sleeping bag, I've got like three cameras, the drone, your battery chargers, your ski boots, all of your clothes, your helmet, your socks, your gloves. It's not very comfortable. But if you don't do it, you're pretty stuck.
And I presume then this project will finish with a climb of Everest then, will it?
So that would be the intention. Because of the timeline, we're likely to do Everest around September. And then we'll be on Mount Vincent in Antarctica to finish the project as we move over from December into January.
Okay. And I have to ask you this. You know, evidently, one of the points of the project is to draw attention to the fact that some of these mountains will no longer have snow on them in the future. Mm-hmm. It may not be possible to have this kind of adventure and ski. But you are flying around the world. There's a carbon cost attached to that as well. I did have a look around on the website, and you have quite a lot of information in there about offsetting. Is that how you plan to tackle that side of the project?
So it's a good question. It's a really important one to address, because absolutely, there's always going to be a carbon cost with almost anything that we do. And the first thing that you need to do is consider reducing your impact. What can you do to make what you do as light touch as you possibly can? So the first thing that we're doing is making sure that we're approaching the film production side of it from the smallest possible way we can, which is just myself essentially and the two skiers. So a significantly smaller team than would go out to say the likes of Blue Planet 2 or larger blue chip natural history documentaries. Then we're using local guides, secondhand camera equipment, working with sponsors which are really good with their sustainability plans, or ones that we're able to help them do that further down the line. That then leaves us with a carbon footprint. We've had that externally calculated at 58 tons for the three of us to do these expeditions. We'll then offset that 58 tons seven times over. So once for each mountain that we climb, and then try and make that part of the story, because the carbon credit industry is quite confusing. I don't think everybody really understands how it works. So what we want to try and do is kind of demystify that process a little bit and try to offset, capture that carbon in different ways. We shoot that, we film the process, we interview the people that are doing it, and where possible, we do that in a region that's connected with the mountain that we're climbing.
Cool. Okay. Well, that's really interesting. So I'm going to put a link to the film website in the show notes. But when might you think that the project, the final film, would go live? Do you have a date in mind for that?
So we're going to be producing a feature documentary, which is going to be for a mainstream distributor. Can't say it right now which one. And that should be towards the end of 2026. And that feature doc is going to be focused on our adventure and our firsthand experiences of the climate change impacts that we find around those mountains. And then we're also doing a series with Protect Our Winters, which is where we unpack the environmental stories of each location in more detail when we're interviewing scientists and activists, farmers, community leaders, to find out a little bit more about what's going on and focus on what people can do about that.
Oh, okay. Well, that is super interesting, John. And listener, when you come across The Last Ride in the future, this is where you heard about it first. I think probably it'd be a good idea to have you back on at some point in 2025 or 2026 to see how some of those future trips go ahead. But that's brilliant. Thank you very much for that. Right. We're going to move on towards the end of the show now. I enjoy all feedback about the show. I'm always interested to hear what listeners think. So please do contact me on social at The Ski Podcast or by email, theskipodcast@gmail.com. A few people have contacted me since the last episode. Jane Michot said, love the podcast, the range of topics and the different types of people interviewed. My 12-year-old son, who's just getting into racing, really enjoys the updates from the Carrick Smiths. And there'll be one of those in a podcast in January. Sean Burton, he very kindly bought me a coffee, buymeacoffee.com/ski podcast. He said, thank you, Ian, for your amazing podcast. I only got back into skiing last January after a 35-year gap, and I cannot get enough of it. Your equipment specials are particularly informative, and I'm going to Latanya by train on the 4th of January. I cannot wait. Well, that's really interesting to hear that, Sean. I hope some of the stories we shared about traveling by train are helpful to you. And finally, Andrea Dalton. Now, she said, just listen to this week's episode, and that was episode 229. Oh, loved it as always. I noticed there was no mention of ski instructors teaching the Peace Cross Code. Both my kids went through ski school for many years, but the instructors never teach any safety. Surely this is one of the best places to learn this. So she's referring to episode 229, where we talk about safety on the slopes. And I asked Amy Henderson, who's one of the founders of Peace Cross Code, if she wanted to reply to this. So she sent me this.
With regards to the question about learning the rules of the piste in ski lessons, I can't speak for all instructors, but most are expected to cover piste safety in their lessons or at least abide by the rules of the piste and lead by example. However, there is no standardisation as to how they deliver this and, in fact, if they cover piste safety at all. We know many, many instructors who do a fantastic job of educating their clients, but unfortunately, we have also witnessed others who clearly do not. However, we are trying to change this, and we have many ski schools across the French and Swiss Alps who are using Piste Cross Code resources to help make the learning process more fun and informative. We have an online quiz, which we spoke about last week, and feedback from instructors is that this is a great tool that they use with their clients as homework or during a hot chocolate stop. We also introduced a pin badge scheme to help children learn. We have 12 ski schools so far across the Alps who are signed up to this scheme, which was launched last season. It is a reward scheme for children who, if they demonstrate a good knowledge of piste safety specific to their age, are then awarded a Monty, our mascot, pin badge. There is a blog on our website if you'd like to find out more about this, which is pistexcode.org.
There are now 240 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with, and 203 of those were listened to in the last week. You can do that too. There's so much to listen to in our previous episodes. Just go to theskipodcast.com, search around the tags and categories, and you're bound to find something of interest. In that last week, 55% of our listeners were in the UK, 19% in the States, and everyone else spread as far and wide as Sri Lanka, Korea, South Korea, that is. I don't think it was North Korea, and Chile. If you like the podcast, there are three things you can do to help. Just follow us. Look for the button, press it now. Alternatively, you can give us a review or just leave a comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And finally, if you want to help us, you can book your ski hire with InSport Rent using the code SKIPODCAST or take the link in the show notes. Now you can follow me at Skipedia and the podcast at The Ski Podcast. I would like to thank my guest today, Jess. Thank you very much. It's probably still only midday. You can go out and ski some more today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And John, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. Hopefully, yeah, I'll come back and have a chat to you again when I've still got all my fingers and toes.
Brilliant. And finally, listener, thank you for joining us wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.